Welcome to Fables of the Force,
a Star Wars rewatch podcast.
I'm Scott.
I'm Matt.
And this is our show.
Welcome, everyone, to episode 121. We're still doing things chronologically. Didn't change in season 7. So we're starting with Gone with a Trace. It was originally the 5th episode of season 7, but chronologically, it's our first for season 7.
Betrayal.
Well, if Yularen says it, you know it's true, and I can't think of a better word, because that's what Ahsoka experienced. Betrayal from the Jedi Order. We're picking up right basically where we left off with her in season 5. We find her descending into the depths of Coruscant and trying to really just find her way. The moral at the beginning of the episode is, if there is no path before you, create your own. Scott?
This is a particularly interesting moral for Ahsoka because she has no path before her really for the first time.
Yeah.
As a young person, she was taken as a Padawan and she was going to be a Jedi Knight. She was going through training. Everything was by the book. She was going up the Jedi Padawan escalator. And this is the first time where she is outside of that path.
Yeah.
And in so many ways is finding her own path for the first time.
And you even see this in the opening shot that we see of Coruscant. It's a different skyline than we've ever seen before. We're used to seeing the Jedi Temple. We're used to seeing the Senate building. And neither of those are in the shot. She's moving away from those. Those are quite literally behind her.
In her rear view.
In her rear view. And then she's descending down into the depths. A lot of symbolism, a lot of foreshadowing. Her very first line, what? As her swoop pipe malfunctions. She's used to Jedi technology. She's using the Republic, the resources. She's not used to having to ride some third-hand swoop bike she bought probably from some shady customer.
Yeah.
Now it's falling apart. She's like, what is happening? This is not what she's used to at all.
Thankfully, she's learned to crash from the very best of them. Anakin Skywalker, known to crash every ship he flies.
Another happy landing.
So it's not long at all before Ahsoka crash lands on the platform that is home to the mechanic shop run by Trace. Trace is a young woman about Ahsoka's age, I would wager. And Ahsoka, I think, is sort of in awe of Trace. She is, for the first time, seeing, oh, this is what a girl my age might do. I can fix things. Maybe I can open up a shop. We talk early in our podcast, in the very first episodes and so forth, about how we have sort of left religious backgrounds. And when you leave religious backgrounds, the people you find outside of that community are like always this barometer of what your life could be like. Oh, they seem to live by their own rules. It's just her and her sister. She's not like having to, you know, follow this doctrine of the Jedi. She's not having to, she's living on her own, providing for herself. Ahsoka's never had to do that. She's never been able to be self-reliant. Here's Trace, who is this young girl, same age as her, and is getting by in the galaxy on her own for the most part.
Pretty well for the most part, too. She has her own ship.
And so while Ahsoka is battle-tested, has traveled the entire galaxy, has fought and sparred with great evils and other Jedi, and has been a big part in the larger galactic conflict, I think she's sort of like, oh, look at this girl who's like kind of living on her own, doing her own thing. She, you know, has her own personality. And I just think that obviously the inverse is true. Ahsoka is awe-inspiring in every sense of the word. But I think Ahsoka feels like she's out of her place and she's looking to learn. And she's really fortunate, frankly, to have
Fallen upon Trace. I thought about that as well, how differently this could have gone had she ended up anywhere else, really. Super fortunate. The will of the Force, ultimately, I think, probably could be called upon here in connecting Ahsoka with the Martez sisters. I noticed right away that Ahsoka was super wary and hesitant of Trace's willingness and eagerness to help her. And it made me a little sad, but not in an unexpected way. But it just kind of, it twinged at my emotions a little bit because the younger Ahsoka wouldn't have been. The younger Ahsoka wouldn't have been wary of the help. She'd have been like more agreeable and accepting. But she's seen so many things, and then was betrayed by basically her family, and now is just like, wait, what is your angle? What do you want from me? Why would you do that? What is this?
I think Ahsoka also has very recently been betrayed.
Right.
Presumably, right?
Yeah.
And so I think there's a part of her that's like, I don't really want to tell you about myself because you could turn me in. What right. I did hasn't really been done.
Right. She just
and who knows,
got
maybe
away.
Maybe the Jedi are looking for me. Mm-hmm. But it certainly isn't trusting.
Right.
And probably more so than ever because of her recent betrayal.
Mm-hmm.
I totally agree. I find it sad in a slightly different way. And that is not understanding why good people are good people outside of what you've been told.
Mm-hmm.
In the sense that Ahsoka's like, oh, well, you probably don't like follow the ways of the Force. And mm-hmm. like, you're still like this good person. Like, to what end? And it's right. like, Trace is like, well, just to do something good. Isn't that rewarding in and of itself? And
right.
surely Ahsoka agrees with her, but the fact that she like doesn't quite understand how someone could act morally without the dogmatic views of the Jedi. And in that way, more so, I feel like she's an unlikely role model for Ahsoka.
Yeah. This arc beginning here has so many little bits and pieces that are going to help us define Ahsoka, because we have 8 episodes with Ahsoka in the Clone Wars now. That's it from season 7, which is awesome because it's way more than we expected to have. But I very much remember watching these episodes when they came out and I thought, that's fine. Let's go. And it was 100% because I knew the Siege of Mandalore was coming. Dave Filoni said that out of the last 10 years of working on Star Wars, the thing he thought about the most, was proud of the most, was the Siege of Mandalore. So that's all I could think about.
Yeah.
So it was hard for me to really appreciate these episodes. For me, it was like, let's go. Let's get on to the
siege. Yeah,
let's
this
get
on is an unwelcome tease yes. to the Siege of Mandalore.
Can we please get there? And now going back and watching them again, which I'm so glad we took a little bit of time. Right, we saw them when they came out, and now some time has passed.
Thank
a
you, COVID-19.
Thanks, COVID. You're so awesome. Now we have this space in between when we watched them when they came out, and we're going back for the rewatch. And it's awesome because I'm noticing all of these little details, not just graphically. Obviously, the overhaul is fantastic, and it's beautiful in every sense of the word. They're very well written, especially here at the beginning. And I think it's really interesting that, at least to me, by the end of this episode, I feel like Ahsoka has already made up her mind about who the Martez sisters are. And I thought that was a really interesting element. She goes through a kind of an adventure. She gets to meet them both. And I feel like just watching her in the scene, I feel like she is confident in who she thinks these people are. She's put them into a mm-hmm. box. And that's what her training is for. That's what she's been doing her whole life, mm-hmm. going to different planets, reading a situation, making a distinction, and taking action based on that. And now she's in a situation where she doesn't have a clear, defined end goal. She's just here.
Mm-hmm.
And she's kind of at the mercy of the Martez sisters because they have her bike. And that's her transportation. And also, she's, like you said, I think maybe in a little bit of awe. She knows she's probably lucked out in finding someone who isn't just trying to screw her over and kill her and take her stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's an opportunity maybe here. She's probably trying to figure out how to trust the will of the Force. Is she? Is she not? She's trying not to use it, clearly. She used it once, but very subtly,
mm-hmm.
trying not to tell anybody what it is. Is it because they're after her? Maybe. Is mm-hmm. it because she feels some issues with her connection to the Force? Maybe.
Yeah.
I mean, she's gone through a lot of crap recently, so.
And also, just even being able to see Trace, again, that sort of role model mentality, like, Trace doesn't use the Force.
Right.
She doesn't have something to just fall back on that's magical, that gives her extra power.
Mm-hmm. And she didn't hesitate to take on those two goons by herself.
Yeah.
At first, she was like, I got this.
Yeah. Yeah. I did love that we got to see Ahsoka help out in the end.
Jedi foo.
Yeah, some Jedi foo, some cool animation, just kicking butt, and that's always fun to see. I really love, and we learn more about it in this arc, but Trace says the passing sentence of, oh, it must be dangerous up there with all the Jedi running around starting wars and policing everything.
Such a great line.
And Ahsoka is instantly defensive.
Yep.
Like, Well, they're trying to end the war. And
Jedi didn't start the war.
Trace is like, yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
And I just think that is so, again, when you meet people outside of the bubble that you've been in for a long time, you suddenly start hearing other people's opinion of the bubble that you are in, and suddenly it's like,
it's not as shiny and pretty as you thought.
This whole world of different perception.
And at this
suddenly
point,
Ahsoka's perception of what the Jedi are, granted she has her own
sure
feelings about how two-sided the Jedi are and not how they all were once thought to be, et cetera, right, et cetera. But like, to outwardly just say that the Jedi are in part responsible for the war and right that they're policing everything.
Well, that would make her partly responsible because she was there and she was one of them. So
exactly,
it's an attack on her to some degree, even though she left.
Yeah.
It's still an attack on her because she was there. And yeah, at this point, we still don't even know
The whole of it.
Right.
We don't know why
we get a little
Trace
suggestion
feels this way, yeah, and we learn about that
later on.
Mm-hmm. It feels like it almost instantly doubles Ahsoka's perception of like who she is, like, but Trace isn't a separatist,
right?
It's, you know, but right, like, no, it's not just the separatists that don't like the Jedi.
Mm-hmm. Was the first time she got that taste, I think, was when she met
Lux Bonteri's mom.
Yes, Mina Bonteri. If you remember that episode, she was often sort of agape. You know, Lux would say something to correct her misperceived notion of things. She would say something very sort of ignorant and Jedi. Mm-hmm. And
biased.
Then he would go, what? And he would tell her what was up. And she'd be like, wait, what? Really? That was the first time she saw a separatist as a person and not as a separatist.
Yeah.
So this isn't, there's precedent for her to be able to sort of like shirk off the automatic categorization that she is so like apt to do.
Mm-hmm.
But I think still, like you said, hearing that kind of stuff is shocking. And I
that
think
it's common. The way she says right it is as if, oh,
as talking, if everyone knows that.
Because everybody knows that.
Mm-hmm. Everybody knows the Jedi are at fault.
Yeah. That
running
they're
around
corrupt
and, getting,
and like
yeah
power
like,
hungry.
Wait, what?
And it just also folds into the idea that like, yes, Order 66 worked because they'd been painted as these villains.
Yeah. Well, we talked about in the Clone Wars, we talked about that all the time, about how all these things would happen and Palpatine would set it up so that it was like, okay, well, if it happens this way, I win because this. And if it happens this way, I lose that, but I also get to lay it at the feet of the Jedi and make them look bad.
Yeah.
So kind of win-win.
Kind of a win-win.
Mm-hmm.
We get an introduction to Rafa, Trace's sister. And again, maybe this is too quick to judge, but I feel like Rafa is just an older, more jaded, less optimistic version of her younger sister. And in so many ways, the youth and optimism of Trace seems temporary in the sense that she's in situations that are going to turn her more like her sister. And there is a sense of desperation in their decision making. As Trace says, down here, everything has a price. And again, I think it's Ahsoka coming to find that, like, not everybody makes three meals a day for you. Sometimes you have to be on your own. And trust me, Ahsoka, when push comes to shove, it is hard to make the right decision. And it's one thing to make the right decision when you're standing with an army in front of you and you're saying you've been told what the right decision is. But it's another to just treat people that have nothing to gain from you with respect and kindness. And yeah, Trace has those like street smarts that Ahsoka just does not have. She must seem like such an adult to Ahsoka because she takes care of herself.
Yeah, she's functioning below the surface of Coruscant just fine.
Yeah.
I mean, not just fine, but yeah, like you said, there's
and
an impending
doom. And Ahsoka's a
little
judgy of Rafa.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
You know? And
once again, like I said,
it becomes more apparent next episode. Mm-hmm. But it's interesting because Ahsoka is coming from a complete place of privilege.
Right.
She's never had to make difficult decisions for herself. That's not fair. I mean, she's had to make a lot of different difficult military decisions, but has never had to fend for herself,
right,
for her resources.
She never did her own laundry before, probably.
Yeah, exactly. I was thinking about that. We never get to see Ahsoka's living quarters.
Right.
And in fact, the only person's living quarters that we ever get to see in any capacity is Anakin's, when he's having visions of his dying mother in Star Wars Episode II, Attack of the Clones. And he seems to be, like, lying around in, like, purple linens.
Yeah.
And, like, silk
looks
sheets.
Okay. Yeah, it looks all right. Yeah. But I bet he doesn't wash them.
I'm sure there are house elves or what have you.
Right.
But anyway, she is not... She lived a comparatively posh life to Trace and Rafa.
So bringing things back around to the motto, if there is no path before you, create your own. It's pretty on the nose, pretty straightforward. But I do like that it applies to Ahsoka. It applies to the Martez sisters. And beyond that, it applies to the Bad Batch. Because they're going to be where Ahsoka's at real soon.
For sure.
So a lot of foreshadowing in this episode.
After Order 66, there is no path for the Jedi. They've tried to cut off the path for all the Jedi.
Mm-hmm.
Any Jedi. Padawan is looking out in a galaxy with no path except for the one that they create for themselves.
And with that, we'll bring this one to a close. I hope you enjoyed our chat. If you have things to share, please do so in the comments. We'll be coming back very shortly with the second episode, our 122 and 706 deal, no deal. Thank you so much for joining us for this episode. If you'd like to chat with us about Star Wars, we're super duper down for that. Expect us to be really, really nerdy and say really nerdy things.
Yeah, you can look up Fables of the Force on Facebook, at Fables of the Force on Instagram, at Force Fables on Twitter. Reach out in any way. We will be there with our Star Wars nerd brains ready to respond to you. Thank you all for listening. I'm Scott.
I'm Matt.
And may the Force be with you.